Awesome, guys. Welcome to the official episode 3 of Thoughtful BS. That is correct, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, episode 3, but there was that first episode,
which is episode 0. So yeah, this is technically episode 3. Apologize for the little delay. We had some technical difficulties over the last 2 weeks. But basically, this episode, we're going to talk about True Detective Season 2, Episodes 5 and 6.
Yep.
And also, at the little bit, we honestly just both saw Trainwreck yesterday. So I think we're pretty eager to talk about that as well.
The new Amy Schumer, Judd Apatow film.
Exactly. But if you haven't seen it yet and are worried about a little spoilers for Trainwreck, you can go ahead and probably skip to the... more the middle of this podcast when we'll be full in talking about True Detective. So,
There's not much to spoil for Trainwreck. Jokes could be spoiled.
We'll ease off on the jokes honestly, right now, I was probably going to list off ton of them. But, okay, so to start, are you going into this movie? Like, I was kind of a loose Amy Schumer fan. Like, I really like the show, kind of like some of her antics, like in the media.
Right.
But I guess I had never really embraced, because you know, the Schumer show feels more like sketch comedy, right? Like,
right. I mean, yeah, it's a sketch sort of setup.
But like, have you seen like her work before that or anything where she's kind of in this rom-com, like an actress role versus like a comedian kind of role?
I've seen very little of her. I can't remember when I first became aware of her. It was before her show was on. Or no, her show's been on 3 seasons, right?
Yeah.
Then it was from her show. Then it was from her show that I first became aware with her. Okay. Yeah.
That makes totally. Me feel.
I mean, I'm curious to look what if she starred in other stuff.
About myself, because I was did I like miss out on this? Like, late to the party as usual kind of thing, but...
I mean, it's really been this year that she's blown up, though, that's honestly. True. This is like, her show has gotten, been better received than any other year this year, and
she's done a GQ cover.
Right.
As well as a parody GQ cover with Star Wars, so props all around to everyone.
Wait, I thought that was the real GQ cover.
Right, but both of them were with Star Wars.
Oh, right.
I think the original GQ cover was, like, her with C-3PO, and, like... The parody Star Wars cover is just like a far dirtier version with I think she's with Chewbacca.
So I'm looking actually, this is fascinating. I'm looking at Amy Schumer's IMDb credits, and like one of the earlier things on there, other than like a indie short no one's heard of, is 30 Rock, one episode where she's stylist. And then Curb Your Enthusiasm, one episode, teammate number 2. So she definitely had a bit of she worked her way up.
She did,
And got herself noticed. She was in, interestingly enough, Sleepwalk With Me, which is Mike, I can never say his name right, but Mike Birbiglia. I slaughtered that name. But he's the husband.
Yeah, he's also in the new season of Orange is the New Black.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I can't really say I've seen a ton with him in it either, but...
Yeah, and then I guess final thing, she was also in a couple episodes of Girls, which I don't remember, but I also didn't know she was.
Well, now I definitely am going to watch her stand-up, like an actual stand-up show.
That I've seen, actually. Oh, okay. That's actually, I think, how I first saw her. Sorry, I should have said that.
Okay. Does that, like, well, because since I haven't seen her stand-up, like, when you're watching the movie, like, I get glimpses of her sketch show, like, on it. Like, to a pretty balanced degree, but, like...
Right.
You know, like, I guess her stand-up, did her stand-up, was that, like, stamped all over the movie as well? Because, you know, stand-up is different than, like, a sketch comedy show, that's why.
The
know?
Type, I mean, it was in the sense that she writes her stand-up. I mean, I'm assuming she has help and, you know, assistance and gets feedback, but she writes her stand-up, it's her voice, and she is also the sole writer of Trainwreck.
That's true.
And so a lot of the same sort of patterns bleed through, themes bleed through, other stuff like that sort of comes through that's in her stand-up. But, like, I mean, like, it's also her, so some of the delivery is similar. So, actually, I mean, in a lot of ways, yeah, it does. It is reminiscent of her stand-up.
Okay, well, then I definitely got to watch that. But, can I start by saying, absolutely fabulous cast.
Right. Oh, like, no, totally.
Like, what up? Our little dog roommate is here visiting. You want to be on our podcast? Because you officially are now, because we're not going to go back and stop recording this, so... What up, buddy? But anyway, absolutely fabulous casting. on all boards. Like,
right.
Oh, I saw John Cena and was kind of hoping he was not going to have any lines. And right. then I was just delightfully just surprised that, A, his part was very well written by Amy Schumer.
Right.
And, B, like, it just worked. Like,
right.
I thought
right.
he was going to be, like, maybe have, like, a weird lift with something. Like, that's usually, like, the weird muscle man stereotype
right,
in rock
right,
opera.
Right.
It's like, oh, yeah, no. Yeah.
What else is he – how do you know him?
Oh, he's a WWF mate wrestler. He's John
oh,
Cena,
really?
The Marine. Yeah, he's like
the guy she's dating at the beginning.
Yeah, the muscle head.
Yeah,
yeah, he's a WWF wrestler.
I had no idea.
He's in that like movie, John Cena, the Marine, and it's just like crappy looking action.
That sounds
movie.
Horrible. I don't think I ever saw.
No, yeah.
That.
Oh my god. Oh wow. Like
maybe I did.
Because
it's one of those that just blended in with all the other horrible ads, but
okay. Well, no. Well, I probably should have told you that after the movie. I thought he'd be recognizable enough that like
right.
you'd get him. Bye, Haas. The dog's gone now. But okay. Well, that I mean, those are like little things I was surprised by, but I did was curious. Were you kind of thrown by the sports element of the movie? Like, I was not expecting that. I thought LeBron was going to be, like, a kind of side cameo. I did
I
not know he was going to be,
somehow
like
I knew that I somehow knew that LeBron was in more than a couple scenes.
Oh, my God.
I didn't know how much of the movie he was in.
Oh, just being a cheapskate, you know,
I mean,
like,
he's like,
I need my money.
He's like, he probably has the fourth or fifth most screen time of any character in that film.
Yeah, I agree. After... I honestly sometimes felt like he got more screen time than, like, Brie Larson, who's her sister.
Yeah, that's, I would say, probably close to.
Yeah, okay. But, and did you, and this is the last sports question. I'm just curious.
Totally.
Because I wouldn't, before 3 years ago, I wouldn't have been into sports enough to recognize anyone except for LeBron. But did you recognize the other athletes that, like, were thanking the doctor in that movie, like Tony Romo?
Oh, I recognized, like... I mean, there were times when a lot of names were dropped.
That you recognized.
That I recognized.
Okay.
But I would say I, like, didn't recognize. I mean, no.
Yeah. But, like, what I was saying is, like...
No, I don't follow sports well enough to...
No, that's fair.
I know the names, and I know, like, what teams they're on often, but I don't...
Yeah.
I'm not good with faces anyway.
No, that's fair. It's just because I honestly was curious if that kind of added to, like, the silly enjoyment of the movie because
right.
Amy Schumer just character hates sports and just does not know anything
right.
about it.
Do you think that was coming? Cause she, I was actually wondering about this cause she wrote it, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if she actually does, but her character. In
right.
The movie,
that's what, so, but, do you,
is
but so do you think that Amy Schumer is a sport? I'm sure this is really easy. We can look it up later. Do you think she's a big sports fan?
I bet she has her, I see her being like, a medium sports fan.
Okay.
Like, she's
when
into
she,
it enough
when
to
she was saying,
it.
When she was saying the stuff about sports and it being, like, a lesser thing for... How did she word it?
I think she was basically wording it as, like...
If you like sports, you're stupid. But
yeah.
She did deliver it was great. But it felt... That actually felt right out of
yeah,
her stand-up.
That exactly
and
right.
So
it's
that,
like sports, you're stupid.
That's, like... That's sort of... Why, like, I almost, because it felt so similar to stand-up, almost wanted to say, like, is this the character here?
Yeah.
Or is this actually Amy Schumer, just, like, her opinion? But then the fact that it's so sports-related, oriented, you know, makes it hard to believe that
well,
she dislikes
Well, I think, if anything, like, she's really good at kind of, not necessarily sticking her nose and, like, her comedy in the face of, like, specific, like, figures and the actions, like, I don't think she's against sports, but I think she's kind of pointing to the fact, like, yo, guys, we take this way too fucking seriously.
Right.
Which,
right.
like, I would honestly agree with, but, you know, and, like, half of our friends would probably punch me in the face for. But, like,
right.
I think that's what it is. Like, yo, guys, these are human beings. Like, why are we making a huge deal?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, no, for sure. So did you find that the film, I mean, how did it differ from what you expected? And did you ever find it, how did you find, like, see it in relationship to just general romantic comedies
okay.
and rom-coms?
So the main elements that I pulled in rom-com world, directly from it, not my initial, like, thoughts or reaction, but, like, you know, there's an older father figure who's clearly a huge impact on their past, and it's bleeding very heavily into their present. Like,
right.
So many rom-coms. And I don't want to name really? Monster-in-law, but I'm going to name Monster-in-law because I love Jane Fonda. But, other than the sibling, there always has... I love the sibling dynamics in rom-coms.
Rom-coms,
like,
yeah.
You see it in, like, Knocked Up. You see it in...
Right. Where do you see it in Knocked Up? Who's... Does Seth Rogen have a brother?
No, but Leslie Mann is Katherine Heigl's sister, right?
Oh. I thought she's like her friend. Maybe they're sisters.
They're definitely related.
And then Paul Rudd is her husband.
Yeah, Paul Rudd is Leslie Mann's husband. So there's that element. And just like, you can't walk into that movie and not going to be like, there's no going to be boy meets girl. Like, that's just foolish to think.
Right.
But honestly, the big surprise was the sports element.
Mm-hmm.
The sports element, I kind of forgot the movie was going to take place in New York. And since I just came from there, it did make me feel a bit nostalgic. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wasn't expecting that. I honestly wasn't expecting this kind of story. I was expecting it to more be like a lot more slapstick comedy and just like Amy Schumer kind of doing a lot of improv and like not having written this full form movie. So that was like a really big surprise.
Right.
And then I thought after, I'm like, oh shit, Judd Apatow wouldn't have attached his name to a movie like that. So I should have probably thought that. But I was delightfully surprised by this movie. Because I knew I was going to like it. I didn't think I was going to like it this much. And I would say the only disappointment, I can't really count as a disappointment because like, this is just, you end up being too nitpicky and it's about like, oh, well, you know, it's kind of, you know, shitty that like, oh, she decided, oh, I have to change myself to get a man. But like at the end of the day, like that's not what it was about, but like, I can see people it coming across to people that way.
Yeah, but she doesn't necessarily. I mean, does she really change herself? Like, is she going to, like, stop drinking? And
I mean, she physically threw away all of her alcohol and drugs. That's and was a very like, good point. I'm going to try for you, which is, like, what she said to him at the end of the movie.
That's obvious. I'm sorry. I can't believe I totally spaced on that. I mean,
I didn't read it that.
I was so like into it. Yeah, no, I can definitely see it coming across that way. Then I feel like an idiot now, but
like I honestly could have seen her going for like a girl power kind of ending. Not that it wasn't really girl power, but like, no, I'm gonna like, you've been a great part of my life, but I don't have time to be with someone. I need to figure out who I am. Kind of, I was honestly thought it could be going that way, and I really like wanted, I guess. I thought it was going to end with her and her sister's family.
Yeah.
But then I was like, no, it's a rom-com. But that was one of my favorite like serious scenes was the
which one?
The one at the end where she reconciles with her sister.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like, no, that was good. I was cheering during that, and then of course her speech.
Right, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. For me, at times, I liked what it did playing with the formula, but at times, because in order to, you know, play on it and flip it on its head occasionally, it did, you know, need to play by it. And also because it's a Hollywood movie, it didn't need to play by it. Mm-hmm. But I honestly found myself, the film dragging a little in the middle. I know, and not to be like a huge negative Nancy, but like, I don't know. I like was super into it at the beginning and it got me again in the end, but there was a time and it wasn't like the dad part of the plot line was compelling enough that didn't feel like it was dragging, but it definitely, I think it was less, it might've also been that it was less laugh out loud comedy every scene than I was expecting, which touches on what you were saying about it being a Judd Apatow film.
Yeah. I agree with what you said. Before like, I don't know what the major shift was, but like you were just assaulted with hilariousness for like the first half an hour of that film. Utterly assault. Like my stomach hurt because I was just laughing so much and I felt weird because there's no one in the theater.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The first scene, I mean the flashback with her father at the beginning.
Oh,
the
God.
Doll analogy. Yeah. It's hilarious. Like,
oh my God. I don't think I could give my daughter dolls anymore. Or my son dolls for that matter. She's like, okay, I'm going to think of this terrible speech to give any child of any, okay, maybe tell a 3-year-old this, they're not going to remember, but any child with a memory should never hear this from a parent. Just like, yeah, man, you have fun with people and don't let one single person only right. let you have fun with them.
Right.
But I guess this will be a good way to wrap up this discussion because, yeah. you know, I really want you guys to go out and see the movie and not listen to us babble about it.
It's definitely worth
it. Where do you want to rank this in your Judd Apatow spectrum? And I know this is a stupid question sometimes, right. but just
no,
like...
No, ranking is, I mean, it's silly, but it's also, it's fun and it can have significance, yeah. so it's also silly.
You like know, and I also don't mean to pull the millennial card.
Right.
But this is like... This is what we, like, tried to sneak in and watch when we right. were adolescents.
Right.
And, like, stupid high schoolers. Right. And, like, so, drunk college. Like, this is not... It was not at all made for us.
Yeah.
But it has a very special part in our, like, development as people.
So, I guess, in terms of... Are you saying in terms of his films or in terms of stuff he's been involved in? Because in terms of his films, I'm realizing I've actually only ever seen... 40-year-old version and Knocked Up. I've never seen Funny People or This Is 40.
No, not necessarily things he's directly directed or written, but
right.
the you know, the films right, other stuff. His crew
then,
is known
then
for.
That's, yeah, I mean, because it probably ranks higher actually for me with the stuff he's directed and written. I personally have, like, I love Amy Schumer more than a lot of the other movies that I like more.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, to me, I like more. I just, for me, like, I love Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
And, like, there's one scene in Superbad where Jonah Hill's berating what's-his-face over the McLovin ID and how stupid an idea it is.
Oh, yeah.
And that monologue just always so makes good. Me, like, have trouble breathing from laughing so yeah. hard.
That movie
And, like,
is,
and
yeah.
Bridesmaids, I love to, you know, and I gotta be honest, I actually probably like Bridesmaids more than Trainwreck.
Oh, okay.
I prefer Amy Schumer to Kristen Wiig probably as a comedian actually.
Okay.
But okay. I just sort of was more into Bridesmaids.
See, I probably should rewatch that, I guess, because I saw that on a plane.
Oh yeah, yeah. I saw that in the theater.
Didn't do it justice.
It was one of those for me that also benefited from the fact that I was like, you know, I'm always down to see a movie, and my friend really wanted to see it because Jon Hamm was in it and had been promoting it, and like it was supposed to be funny and some Saturday Night Live people.
Yeah.
And so like I agreed to see it, but I was like, oh, what's this? It's a rom-com. I don't know anything about this. And then it like just sort of rocked my socks, and so I was like, oh, that movie was hilarious and awesome.
Okay.
So you know, it was Trainwreck. I had really high expectations going in.
It met them,
but I had pretty high expectations.
Oh, okay. Oh, this is the case. You seem to have higher expectations than I do. I don't know what that means. But, all right. Well, interesting, because I also would rank those two movies very highly above this, but it is, again, to note, there one is a buddy comedy.
The other is a coming of age.
Yeah, a coming of age story, buddy comedy as well.
Right, yeah, they're both.
So I guess purely looking at rom-coms, you get, yes. yeah, we get Knocked Up and 40-year-old version.
I like Knocked Up. I prefer Trainwreck to. I prefer Trainwreck actually to both Knocked Up and 40-year-old
okay.
version.
I thought Trainwreck was funnier than Knocked Up a lot. Yeah. There's some scenes that are just so broed out in my mind that I'll always think they're funnier.
Yeah, yeah.
For Knocked Up. But I would put Trainwreck and 40-year-old on the same level.
For right. me. So I can't remember 40-year-old very well. It's been so long.
I think it's just because I was like, God, I'm going to be this person when I'm 40. And I was just like, I just prepared myself for that inevitability. I'm glad that's not the case, guys. Yeah. But, you know, sad 15-year-old was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I don't know. It just, I don't remember figures. It very well. Like I remember thinking it was hilarious, and I remember really liking it, but I only ever saw it once, and it was in, like, 2006.
Yeah, that's so. I was honestly, like, kind of embarrassed to see that movie when it first came out, even though all my friends liked it. I was like, oh, it looks so awkward, like, too awkward,
yeah.
but, you know, it's a good movie.
Yeah,
but,
it's good.
So go see Trainwreck, guys. It's really funny, and more importantly, if you don't too lazy to go to the movie theater, just go on Hulu, watch an episode of Inside with Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
It's hysterical. Your tummy will hurt a lot. And
I think it's just Inside Amy Schumer.
Is it Inside Amy Schumer?
Joke.
Oh,
yeah, I think that's part of the joke. I could be.
No, you're probably right. Inside with Amy Schumer sounds really stupid.
Yeah.
But go ahead and watch it. It's really funny. You won't be disappointed. Unlike great transition point.
Yeah.
True Detective Land. Oh my god, True Detective Land. What has been going on in True Detective Land? Such oh, I'm sorry. Boring. I mean, Vinci. Fucking, yeah. I don't give a where we are in California. Fuck this. I'm not done with the show because I really like the main character, but I'm just at this point I actually am disappointed.
Yeah. Yo, I don't think I'm disappointed because I don't think I had. I mean, I would have been disappointed if this was a year ago and it had come out initially, immediately, right after the first season. But because of my expectations plummeted when they announced Justin Lin that Cary Fukunaga was not returning, and then they went down more when it was Justin Lin's directing at least the first two episodes, and then it was and Vince Vaughn's in it. I just and then the trailers didn't look very good to me, and so honestly, my disappointment mostly happened before the series ever started, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay. See, for me, I'm just
Then I was hoping to be surprised is sort of what I was hoping for.
I was legitimately hoping to be impressed. I was all right, these are interesting choices, but I'm optimistic. I'm excited. Oh, look at this trailer. The music's cool, and it's far out and guitar-y brooding faces, Taylor Kish, brooding faces. And I was okay, I mean, I haven't got a lot from this, but it sounds like something has to be, there's not enough interaction between the main characters, and it fucking drives me insane.
Yeah. What I meant when I compared it to Game of Thrones, was how,
Oh, no, I
got that. Yeah.
I got that, but Game of Thrones works when we're not seeing interaction between characters.
Yeah, well, that's because they also started with solely based in interaction between characters.
That's true.
Expanded it.
That's true. But,
so those relationships exist, whereas here these relationships don't exist, and they're continuing to just sort of not exist.
okay, time skip. This is the episode where we talk about what's happened after this 2-month time skip. What are the... just talk right now. What are the best scenes in your mind that stand out?
I was fascinated by the climax of the sixth episode with the sort of Bernard Herrmann score. They're score, but the strings and the score.
You liked it, or you were interested by it? Because I thought it was fascinating.
I was interested by it, but I enjoyed
irritating as fuck.
Yeah, I don't know. I got invested somewhat in this sixth episode, which I was not at all. The fifth had me rolling my eyes. The shootout, finally, I was this show might be about to pick up and get interesting. And the same with the rest of the fourth episode. And then episode five just had me, the scene between Taylor Kitsch and his mother, which is, the most cliched, horrible, white trash, over-the-top drama,
these aren't real
not
people.
Well done, and it was unbearable.
And
it was
honestly, just every scene with Vince Vaughn and Kelly Riley.
Well, Kelly Riley, the interesting thing about Kelly Riley's character is, why is she there?
Yeah, I don't know.
I really hope that her character comes into play a role in the final two episodes, because right now
she's the killer.
She's totally supplementary and totally unnecessary.
She's the ginger killer.
God damn it.
She's the connected one. That would be more interesting than what is going on.
Seriously, though, don't you agree? Christ. She's just... why is she there other than for Vince Vaughn to talk to?
That is the only reason. Yeah, and horrible. Honestly, Vince Vaughn doesn't need anyone to talk to. He can just look at the camera because half of his lines are very poorly either written or delivered or directed. Pick one of the three, because it happens in every episode. It's the most inconsistency. Oh my god, the beginning of this Sunday's episode, scene with Vince Vaughn and Colin Farrell between Frank and Ray. The only two characters that I actually really get excited to see together all the time.
Right.
I was just, this is the worst scene ever. What is this dialogue?
Right. It was pretty.
We're about holding guns on our table, so. You know, we're old friends, and I was drinking again. The other night. But I'm going to say this right now.
Yeah.
The best shots in this entire series for all six episodes, and standing out more so in the past two, are when no one is fucking talking.
That's so true.
And I literally think it's because the actors are actually pulling their weight in that department.
Totally.
These eyes. That's all they use in the trailers.
This is the series. I mean, it's going to be one of those series, I think, that's seen as, like, killed by its creator, who just, it's like...
I want to just hang out with Nick and, like, make him, like, Japanese food and see, like,
Nick what he Pizzolatto writes. Nick and just be like, hey, dude, maybe, you know, lighten up on the,
let's
clunky ninth grade existential bullshit.
Yeah. I don't know what you were reading in ninth grade. Maybe freshman year at college, trying to pretend to be cool kind of kid. Dude, I didn't know what existentialism was in ninth grade.
Some of the statements are just so bad. Like, Vince Vaughn, sometimes your worst self is your best self. And, like, other shit like that. It's just like, why is this?
I feel pretty bad right now.
I mean, I was saying this to you the other day about time is a flat circle. That line from the first season. It's such a horrible line. But McConaughey's so good and delivers it in such a way that it became an iconic, like, quotable line of the series that was sort of like humorous in a weird way, but like that, not because it was so bad, which is what that line actually is.
Yeah.
McConaughey just hides it.
Yeah. It's because he's weird, like, and
who the fuck would actually write a line where one character says to another character, time is a flat circle? Even if they're like,
it's like something someone would say in, like, an anime.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like very that. Much like anime. Maybe Nick Pizzolatto needs to watch less anime. I don't know.
Nick Pizzolatto needs to, like, go outside more, I think.
Yeah.
Jesus. Like, now I solely attribute the mastery of landscape to Cary Joji
Fukunaga. Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
Joji Fukunaga. And honestly,
most of the first season now, it's...
Okay. What? Let's talk about. I don't want to go here, but let's talk about women in this show.
Right.
I was kind of not. Maybe I missed stuff in the earlier episodes. I was not seeing the Annie Besaretti's was a child victim kind of story.
Oh really?
I thought her attitude was solely based on that, like, some rift happened between her and her mother and father.
I don't think that it's necessary. Like, it's sort of implied it, but it hasn't.
It hasn't directly said that.
But so, like, that's why I'm not sure.
Episode definitely confirmed that.
You mean the when she's tripping?
When she's tripping and she sees the guy who invited her into a van when they were living on the commune.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And also, like, the fact that her sister is like, hey, if you thought, because she now it, I guess, makes sense why she hated those porn guys so much.
Right, right.
And then when her sister's like, hey, like, you thought those porn guys were bad. These guys are disgusting.
Way worse, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, like, I'm just like, okay, where's that going?
Right,
like,
right,
I thought she was just,
right.
You know, was trying to protect her sister. And, like, I don't want to say it's cheap because we shouldn't corner, like, or just, like, block out things that are, like, either tropes or something.
Right, right. Oh, totally.
But it felt like, dude, this chick is awesome, and you've basically just said she's awesome because she's been a victim.
Right, yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like, no, dude. Like,
yeah.
That didn't ruin the character because I was very disappointed.
You know, it's funny. I guess I'm interested to see if it plays a larger role in the rest of the series. Especially, so did you think it was possibly her father that the guy was?
No.
Oh, I thought that looked like it was supposed to be sort of young her father was
I thought it was just a hippie on the compound.
Okay.
Honestly, I feel like unless rape is not what happened in that van.
Right.
I think if her father did that, this kind of character would not interact with her father.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
And that's why, like, I thought the physical resentment, well, now it's clearly like he didn't protect her enough, but I literally thought it could have been like, hey, where's the female? Where's the mother in this picture?
Right.
And, like, maybe there's a rift because of the way he wanted to live, or he convinced her to live a certain way and she died. And, like, that's why.
For sure.
This just maybe it's just, I'm just pissed because my theory got busted, but I didn't want a massive mansion orgy.
Right. Oh, I mean, yeah, I didn't either, but I knew that was coming because there was a Hollywood Reporter article saying about that, and so I sort of like knew that that was going to be part of the season. So I was just sort of waiting to see how that fit in.
Like, it worked. I just was like, dude. You got caught out for not treating women well in the first season, and you're not doing a great job.
Right, that's, I think, why it got the article.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was, like, the fact that they were actually having to hire, like, fucking porn stars rather than actresses.
Well, I mean, because they were going to be physically, like, so ridiculous. Yeah, like, this is going to sound terrible, ladies and gentlemen. Right. They were physically, right. They were just props.
Right. Oh, totally.
As much as those old men were props, but right, because they're old men. Right. Yeah, no, But, like, I at least I'm the only grateful thing I am for that entire. The sequence was cool. The scoring was great. Like, it was not shot poorly. Nothing was executed poorly about the physics of physical process of making the mansion scene.
Right.
Didn't love the content, but I did love. Let's go back to that score.
Like, it's so funny you said that. I was just about to.
Did that just not drag you into, like, cool? So you definitely are trying to make a noir film.
Oh yeah, I mean, but I felt like the noir thing was already so. I mean, over the top, like...
Yeah, that's true. But, like, I don't know. Nothing makes something more viscerally over the top for me than a music, like, a score like that.
Yeah.
Like, it was just grating, and it only made you kind of think about, like, it kind of made what was going on the screen just flash at you.
Yeah.
And then you just hear
it's
this,
totally...
Like,
do you know the Vertigo score? It's so similar to the classic Bernard Herrmann score for Vertigo.
Oh no, I don't.
Or some of the scores for Rebecca, but yeah, oh definitely we should. But also we can close the podcast with that music.
Oh god, yeah, we should find that.
All right. I have it. I'm sure it's easy to pull up.
Okay,
but yeah, no, I like it because I like how it loops.
Yeah,
like, I mean, the strings sort of just are sort of circular, and I felt like it worked. And maybe it's because, again, I'm associating it with Vertigo and the climbing up the stairs of Jimmy Stewart climbing the clock tower and climbing other things. But it worked with her sort of going through the mansion. It just sort of not necessarily climbing the mansion, but just sort of like
wandering.
It was this like sort of. I don't know. I'm at lack of words of it.
You're like trapped in a loop.
Yeah.
And like she's drugged, so she's trapped. She's trapped in this fear of being kind of fucked up and delirious.
So it was interesting. And then it was very like just suspenseful noir when it cut to the guys outside with the guns and stuff. But it kept that music through so much of it, which is so fascinating to me.
And my favorite part is as soon as we got pretty deep into the score, I just pictured like an old style like phonograph or like record player with the horn, just like with like a disc that's stuck on like the same
other thing is it was very different, it felt like, than the rest of the score that we've been seeing this season, which I often think of as being the main place. I think, I mean, I'm sure there's score in moments I haven't noticed because I've been paying attention to other things, but is in the transitions there's sort of this pulsing with those shots of LA,
and nothing melodic or at all, like, leading.
Though, really quickly.
Except for the physical, you know, music. Right.
Oh, the girl who sings who's horrible. But speaking of,
On the Conway Twitty as well.
Speaking of the transitions between scenes and the shots of the city and the freeway.
Yeah.
What I did admire in this episode was there's one great shot where at first it was like, oh my gosh, it's horrible. It's such a standard shot of just like Los Angeles. And then I realized, wait a second, no, LA is like, I mean, it's a fascinating shot. If you divide the screen, if you were to like draw lines, you know, break it down into tenths, you know, horizontally, LA was only occupying like the top tenth. The skyline was only top tenth. And then it was had this really wide angle lens and you were just seeing it sprawled out below. And it was just fascinating. So it was a fascinating way to focus on Vinci and to push LA to the background. I admired the cinematographer who did that shot just because they probably sent out to get, you know, just get some coverage of the skyline and, you know, like the warehouses down there. And they created this fascinating one that sort of put LA, but like way in the back of it.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I know what shot you're talking about. I'm just trying to picture it very clearly. But yeah, I like all of those. Right. But at the same time, do you think they're just there because that's how the first season came together? Like, I still very feel that way.
Is part of what makes it feels like Game of Thrones is not because Game of Thrones has the same type of shots, though they, I mean, occasionally have establishing shots like any show will, but because it uses them because it needs to transition to two things that are often not the next, are not narratively linked directly. Yeah. You know, it's not like Colin Farrell leaves, gets in his car, and then, we cut to him pulling up, you know, somewhere else where he's going.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, and now we need to cut something completely unrelated. And so oftentimes they do need those sort of as transition. But I actually, they've grown on me. I like the way, and the pulsing music sort of that's used with them, this sort of ominous, you know,
that still feels urban instead you know, country kind of. Yeah, I think it's for me. I just loved how lonely and barren and terrifyingly mystical those landscape shots from season one played off. Right.
Oh, I mean, like, those, they were so much better. It
just so hyper-enhanced my experience that, like, honestly, I sit, I'm like, oh, these are beautiful shots, and I can think back thematically and say, like, yeah, the twisting of the storylines and the connectivity and just the busyness, but, like, it doesn't enhance my experience tenfold, like, you know, the shots of the bayous in Louisiana and the old dirt country road. I've been playing too many video games. But I don't know. Can you think of anything major that has happened in the past two episodes that are just like, whoa, that was cool?
I liked Colin Farrell's self-destructive dance.
Oh, my God.
The drinking and the coke and the smoking and the dancing.
I almost forgot about that.
And the breakdown. That was probably the... If you ask me one thing I think back over the past two episodes, that's what immediately comes to my head.
It's just a great sequence.
Yeah, it's a great... Yeah, it's outstanding.
How much coke do you think he did?
Oh, too much.
Just like... Just like... Is that just like flour on the table? It's like, no.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like a Ziploc bag of cocaine.
Right.
And he just downs... Please tell me that was tequila, right? I don't think it was whiskey.
Oh, no, I thought it was tequila.
God, to make it even more California.
But yeah.
Oh, I just could not do that. But I don't know. You know what? Let's use this as a jumping point. Ray Valcoro is my favorite character. Am I wrong to think that
same.
He's arguably yours?
Yeah, I mean, he's just... And I do like Colin Farrell as an actor, but...
Look, I want to break that down, because if I had to give you the 2 points... I agree. Like, I think he's my favorite. He's the most compelling. I want to see him, what he's doing every week. I think it's because he has the most succinct and relatable side plot story with his family. I think that grounds that really, like...
Yeah.
Like, everyone else, it's so jumbled. So
that, but that's not to say that necessarily giving the other characters side stories with background would help. Like, for example, in fucking Vince Vaughn's case, it's hurting.
Oh, no, it's definitely... I'm just saying...
It's not well-developed.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is his backstory doesn't have to be well-developed. It's just very... It's clear.
Right.
And it's like an actual... points of moving forward. Like, forget uncovering what happened. Like, that's a nice treat. Like, I want to, like, he actually has stakes.
Right. Sometimes. No, No, I agree.
And the other thing is just, he's just killing the role. He's, the other actors are doing pretty good jobs. Rachel McAdams stands out. I just think, you know, sometimes her character's not well written.
Yeah, I agree.
But his character, he's like, he's the McConaughey of the series. Like,
yeah.
For me, he captivates me. I want to see what he's doing. I'm always curious just the way he's talking about things.
Right.
He's looking at, you know, like I'm constantly trying to figure out what his intention is. And I'm wondering, like, can you think of, are those similar reasons for you? Or can you think of like another big shiny note on top of that? Like,
not really. I mean,
shiny
he's
Colin
magnetic.
Farrell
it's
note.
Just,
yeah.
No, it's the performance. I mean, you know.
Oh, and some to forget, he was once a SWAT cop with a... With kind of an Irish, like, bro accent in SWAT with Jeremy Renner.
I know.
With Jeremy Renner.
I know.
Before he started flipping houses. God, I hate Jeremy Renner right
now. He's pretty not great, but yeah.
But, at this point, we have to watch the last two episodes.
Oh, yeah, totally.
No, we're not going to stop.
Depending who's starring in it and who's directing, I might be back.
But, like, I'm no longer on an exponential curve of growth and interest. I'm literally just plateaued.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
Maybe come down a little.
Definitely.
I'd rather watch Ballers.
Ballers
anime.
Tight.
Anime
is tight, too.
Taking a priority over True Detective, which is probably going to piss some people off, but whatever. You should watch One Piece.
All right.
But, thanks for listening, guys. I apologize. We got a little frustrated with True Detective right now. And it happens. We have a lot of great new shows to look forward to coming, especially in the fall and at the end of summer. We're going to wrap up on True Detective here, mostly because I want to save what the future of the show is for later episodes. But I'm really excited for The Leftovers.
Yeah.
Does that have a release date yet? Is that supposed to be
probably
September?
I don't follow The Leftovers.
How can I convince you to watch that?
You'd have to get me to rewatch the first episode. I don't know. I just remember hating watching that first episode is nihilistic.
Was it
bullshit.
Was it the overacting and the yelling and just say fuck?
It was
fuck.
Everything, dude. I was not into that. All right. Maybe it goes in an interesting direction, but I hated that pilot. And I don't like Peter Berg either. So yeah.
Oh, what else has he done? I think maybe I went in with zero.
Battleship. Lone Survivor. He's done some other stuff. He's done more notable things. But yeah, he's... You
know. Honestly, maybe it's I went in with no expectations for the show and was like, yo, this is creepy and weird. I can't believe America's doing this.
Right.
Well, leftovers look forward to some insta-watch tips for streaming right now. A bunch of new stuff just got added onto Netflix. So you can always check that out. I think that happened like... We're finally at the tail end of the July release, and probably starting August 15th, we're going to see a new Washoe movie.
I mean, but also the first. Don't they put new stuff in on the first?
I thought they're not because of the... Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah,
I don't
know. Goes up on the first.
I've been watching reruns of Planet Earth, so forgive me. But, you know, if you guys have any questions, I'm going to post our email on the iTunes chat as well as the Podmatic links. Feel free to yell at us, complain, give us feedback on how terrible we're doing this podcast, et cetera, et cetera. We'd actually love to hear from you.
Yeah, no, we would, definitely.
I'm not working right now. I'll answer your questions if you email me like 5 minutes after I post the podcast. I just want to hear how we're doing, and maybe how you're doing. So do you have any final notes, Nate?
I don't think so. I think that's it.
All right. Well, thank you for chatting with me.
Yeah, other than some Bernard Herrmann Vertigo music.
So stay tuned for that, maybe. Yeah. But thanks for tuning in this week, guys, and I hope you all enjoy the rest of your week.
Yeah.
Thanks.